So your column starts off with the question of who won the Great Proxy War of 2016. And there's not exactly a clear answer to that question, but how did things shake out in state-level races?
Both of the major combatants, Governor Bruce Rauner, the Republican, House Speaker Mike Madigan, the Democrat, can point to certain contests and say, well, we won because we prevailed in these areas. I mean, the governor and his allies were crowing about how they actually showed a net gain of 4 seats in the House and 2 seats in the Senate. And they said, well, this shows that Madigan is losing his grip and our message demonizing Madigan has worked. And Madigan no longer has a veto-proof majority. And so they're patting themselves on the back for that. The Democrats, on the other hand, would say, well, look at the results statewide. Illinois voted for Hillary Clinton for president. Illinois voted for Tammy Duckworth, a Democrat, to replace Republican Senator Mark Kirk. Illinois voted for Susana Mendoza to be state comptroller, replacing Leslie Munger, who Governor Rauner appointed to the position after the untimely passing of Judy Bar Topinka. There's kind of bragging rights on both sides. But maybe rather than who won or who lost, maybe a more important question is, what does it all mean? Unfortunately, I don't see very much of anything having changed. Now, true, Madigan no longer has 71 members in the Illinois House. There'll only be 67 Democrats, less than the 3/5 majority required to override a governor's veto. John Cullerton, the Senate president, will still have a veto-proof majority. But as a practical matter, Democrats have not used those majorities to override the governor with any regularity.
And your story looks at how the Democratic and Republican control in the legislature has changed from a regional perspective as far as the areas that maybe have been strongholds in the past and maybe aren't now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, over the last 20 years, there's been a marked shift in basically the regional makeup of the political parties, particularly for Republicans, as the suburbs have become more diverse in terms of having more Hispanic Americans, more Asian Americans, more African Americans, they've become more Democratic. And kind of the flip side is that as downstate communities have suffered the loss of manufacturing jobs in southern Illinois, of coal mining jobs, jobs that used to be held by unionized blue-collar workers more inclined to vote for the Democratic Party, those areas have become more reliable Republican than they were, say, 20 years ago. And so I kind of looked at the statistics. The standard notion that the Republican Party is dominated by folks from suburban districts no longer holds true. As a matter of fact, in both the Senate and the House, there are going to be more Republican lawmakers from districts outside the greater Chicago area than from the city or the suburbs. From Cook County itself, there are only going to be a total of 3 House members and 1 senator elected from districts that are mostly in Cook County. And that is a dramatic change from what it was 20 years ago when the suburbs held the dominant position and were the majority within the Republican caucus.
So looking at a kind of long-standing issue of education funding for K-12 education, your column touches on that this change in sort of regional politics could have some impact on that. How might that affect the push for reform to K-12 education funding?
The closest we've come to serious educational reform in the last 20 years or so came in 1997 when Governor Edgar proposed a package that would include 25% increases in individual and corporate income tax rates to generate roughly $1.5 billion. $900 million of it would go to abate property taxes in local school districts. We give you a dollar, you cut your tax levy by a dollar. The other $600 million would have been targeted to districts that have relatively small tax bases, the poorer school districts, so to speak, that don't have a big shopping center, don't have some big industrial complex that they can rely on to boost up their tax base. That bill was proposed by Governor Edgar at a time when Republicans controlled the Senate, Democrats controlled the House. Back in the mid-90s, the Republican caucuses in both chambers had a majority of people from the suburbs and a minority from elsewhere, from downstate, basically. And the Republican leadership, House Minority Leader Lee Daniels, Senate President Pate Phillip, rejected the plan outright. The rationale was, we live in relatively wealthy areas. Our people are going to pay more in income taxes. The money is going to get funneled to downstate and old Chicago, of all places. And so we're not going to vote for this. And they didn't want their members to either. So Edgar's plan was championed in the House. It was adopted by Mike Madigan. And Madigan pushed it through. Now, there were a half dozen downstate Republicans who voted for it because they looked at the results for their local school districts and said, we do really well with this plan. So the bill passes the House, largely through Madigan's efforts. It goes over to the Senate, and Pate Phillip puts it in committee. And it's still there today. Well, not really, because everything got wiped clean when the session ended. The leadership was able to stymie that bill because they didn't see it of great benefit to the suburbs, despite its value to downstate. Fast forward to next January, when the suburban presence will be minority in the Republican caucuses, downstaters will have the majority. Might the Republican entourage have a different view of a school funding change that would help downstate and maybe come at the expense of some of the rich suburban districts? I don't know if it will or not, and a lot depends. Is Governor Rauner interested in seriously reforming schools?